From the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, this is Marketing Matters on Business Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Marketing Matters here on Business Radio, Sirius XM 132. I'm Barbara Kahn, the Patty and J.H. Baker Professor of Marketing, and I'm joined by my co-host, America Sreed, the Whitney M. Young Jr. Professor of Marketing and the Brand Identity Theorist. Hello, America.
Hi, Barbara. So I'm excited because the weather, I believe the weather has finally, you know, jumped into, I know it's still a 52 fake out, but I feel like we're on the cusp of actually some warm, you know, it's really spring-like stuff. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and spring lasts, what, 10 minutes? It's supposed to be the hottest summer ever.
I'm hearing this, that climate change stuff. Oh, man.
Yeah,
so
it will not be good.
What are we going to talk about today?
So today we're going to talk about all the news that's happening. And a lot of marketing news is happening, like TikTok's happening.
Yeah.
Cookies may or may not be going away.
Yeah.
And it's all about what AI is going to do. And then there's all sorts of interesting things happening in the brand world.
Mm.
And there's nobody better to talk to us about that.
Yes.
Then Peter Adams.
Peter Adams.
Senior reporter of Marketing Dive.
AKA Patch Adams, as they refer to him on X, I believe. Is that correct, sir?
That is true. Yes, I've had that handle since high school now.
Oh, really?
Very nice. Very, very cool.
Well, hello, Peter, and welcome to our show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah. So, you know, we're excited because you are a journalist, Peter, and you are on the beat. Always with your finger on the pulse of what's going on in marketing, branding, retail, consumers, all of this wonderful stuff. And so we're excited because we're going to do a little portion of our show, which is called Hit or Miss, where we identify some of the topics that you've been studying and covering. And we try to, amongst the three of us, you and Barbara and myself, figure out if it's a good thing that's happening in the marketplace currently, which we call a hit, or if it's a bad thing, which is happening in the marketplace currently, which we call a miss. And we'd love to do this segment. It's called
Hit.
Bullseye.
Or miss.
Just a bit outside.
So let's talk about the big news. I don't know if you've written the article yet and if you're up to speed on it, but do you want to tell us what you know about TikTok and the ban?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things that's kind of been looming, honestly, going back to 2020 when Trump threatened to ban it, and it got very close to the finish line. With there was a point in time when Microsoft and maybe Walmart were going to acquire the app just a few years ago.
Interesting.
And, you know, ever since then, that ended up flaming out. But you know, now that this bill has passed through the Senate and landed on Biden's desk, and he's signed it, so the clock is now officially ticking.
Interesting.
For them to either divest or shut down in the U.S., which would in either case seriously disrupt the current social media landscape and digital advertising.
Peter, are you a heavy TikTok user? You too, Barbara. Are you heavy? Are you a heavy user? I'm not on it that much, but I'm hearing it's the most addictive. Is that what are you?
Well, one of the things I'm thinking, I mean, this goes back to the question I was going to ask about it also. If something happened to TikTok, which who knows what's going to happen here? I think I've heard reports that China does not want to sell it, so that may not be the route. But there are substitutes. So when you say, like, are you a TikTok user, there's also Instagram Reels or Meta or all these other Reels and Snap Reels and things like that. So even if you're not using TikTok per se, that format of short videos and getting your content that way, I think that, I mean, you can't help but use it. I imagine even you use that in other forms, not necessarily TikTok.
Yes, I'm not on TikTok. I am on Instagram Reels, as you said, and also YouTube Shorts, I guess, is what they're calling it over there.
Right,
So
you can't help but do that.
Yeah.
And one of the things, Peter, I'm really curious about your perspective on this, because I just had this big aha, which I don't know why it took me so long to figure out. But like, I was always thinking of TikTok kind of like a social media platform, but it really isn't. To me, it's much more like a traditional advertising platform, only it's a whole different way of showing
unpack
content.
That a little bit. What do you mean?
In
by
other
that?
Words, like when I talk to people about TikTok, and you might know better, Peter, it seems like a lot of people are passively watching their their TikTok or uh-huh. watching their reels. They're uh-huh. not necessarily creating reels.
Oh, interesting.
Now, influencers do, and people who right. want to be influencers kind of do it.
Right.
But they're kind of like creating content.
Right.
Instead, it's kind of like
that's
the new way I watch TV. Instead of watching TV shows
that's,
that are pushed at me, I kind of watch these TikToks, videos
fair.
That are pushed at me, and I can go through them faster.
Interesting.
So I can pick and choose. I have more control over them. But they're not interactive in the way like I post on Facebook or Instagram.
Oh,
or something like that. It feels like it's more the way I'm getting my content.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Peter?
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I think it's more comparable to something like, YouTube than Facebook, where, or at least Facebook in its original conception, where it's a small network of your friends and you comment on each other's pictures that you upload or something like Instagram. You're correct that it is a kind of passing viewing occasion. I imagine much more people watch TikToks than make them.
Interesting.
But it's also kind of sitting in this middle space as well, where, it's a big sharing culture. I know we've also talked about Instagram Reels, like you send Reels to your friends all day or whatever. You see something interesting and you kind of want to pass it along in that respect.
Mm.
And that's kind of what helps drive
right.
the most valuable
aspect
of
the platform.
So that
makes a difference. So, but you're still not creating it. You're just sharing
you're
it.
You're sharing it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. In a lot of cases, I would imagine.
Peter, any data? Are we aware of the who's number one in like number of daily active users? Where is TikTok in that list? Do you happen to have statistics on this?
So it's currently at about 170 million in the U.S.
Okay.
So it's quite large at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite at the scale of something like Instagram or Facebook.
Mm,
but you have to keep in mind that Facebook and Instagram have been around, for over a decade now.
Yeah.
And this is a comparatively, fairly new platform and only really took off at scale during the pandemic. Another interesting thing about them is that they have this rep of being kind of the Gen Z platform, the go-to teen platform.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's true, it is very popular with kids. They also have a huge millennial and Gen X contingent.
Interesting.
All of this band stuff is occurring right around next week. They're going to give I don't know if they'll still do this. They might cancel it. Who knows? They're supposed to be giving their big pitch to advertisers as part of the new fronts. And in past years, when I've attended that, they've been like, hey, we're not just the Gen X app, because they want to win more brand dollars. And they're saying you can reach, parents, Gen Xers, millennials, what have you. So it's a pretty big user base at this point in the U.S., and it's also a fairly diverse one.
So it is interesting to see what happens now that, as Peter said, the ban has been signed by Biden. And
yes, which
what
means,
I
by
read,
the way, Barbara, that half the country hates this.
Yeah, yeah. But it is like, both sides are agreeing on this.
Oh, is it?
One
okay.
issue.
Is this bipartisan?
It is pretty bipartisan, this idea, the fear of China owning this data. I think that's what it is. I don't think people are against the idea of TikTok.
Right.
They're
oh.
worried about the control of the data. Or they're also worried about influencing people's beliefs, in sleazy ways, like, say, pornography, child pornography or something like that, that you really want to protect your kids. But also, they can influence people's opinion about the war in Gaza, like that. So, and if it's China who's controlling the way people think, that's very scary to both sides of the house.
Right.
I think that's what people are really worried about,
yeah.
the persuasion ability.
Yes.
And to what Peter's saying, it's not just kids, although that's what makes them worried.
Yeah.
But it's adults and, even maybe aging geriatric boomers, who knows?
Interesting.
He didn't mention them, but maybe.
Right, but to your point, Barbara, I think there's a very interesting aspect there. And we're in a new world of political messaging now, I think, is your point, in the sense that, you can buy ads on TV, linear television, all you want, but this is where people really get the information inside of their echo chambers, no?
Yeah, it's the echo chamber.
Yeah.
So it's the algorithm, and once you decide you like... I mean, like, I made the mistake of liking Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce, and I know every single thing that those guys do, And you can't get at it once you go. So it's very strong on that kind of thing. If you want to get out of your echo chamber, you kind of have to re-log in as somebody else.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that make this whole way of communicating information and entertainment radically different. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to go away, right, Peter? Even if something happens to TikTok, there's going to be these substitutes that pick up in the void, like almost instantaneously, I think.
Mm.
Kind of to build up a few things you've said there, you know, the one of the really kind of, I don't know if you could call it hypocrisy, but, you know, Biden has indicated he's willing to you know, he signed the thing that's put the ticker down on the ban going into effect. He's still politically campaigning on there. They still manage the Joe Biden account on TikTok. So when you want to talk about influence and political ad spending, like, they're not. It's this weird kind of tension or whatever you want to call it, where, you know, they're saying X or Y about the app, but they're still actively on it. And in terms of the alternative stuff, like, you've mentioned Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, Snapchat has a feature called Spotlight. You know, even some other platforms have all tried experimenting with the short form video format that TikTok really popularized. I don't think any of them are quite as far along in the monetization efforts as they would hope they would be. You know, it's just a different form factor. You know, most people started watching YouTube videos. They watch a 10, 20 minute creator video or a 5 minute, you know, joke video saying, hey, now just watch these very short kind of quick hit. You know, it's a different advertising model. The way that the executives constantly phrase it is it's a different surface. You know, it's not like serving a pre-roll ad. You've got to serve shorter videos and all this type of stuff. And, you know, another question with the ban is, so you ban TikTok, but one of the biggest problems with the digital advertising industry, and this kind of maybe ladders into some of the other stories we'll touch on today, is it's basically two companies controlling the entire market. It's Facebook and Google. You get rid of one of the most exciting and lucrative disruptors, those dollars, even in the midst of a potential ban, when advertisers are going, well, should we advertise on TikTok? It might go away. Those dollars are just going to go back to the players that were already dominant and have this just enormous share.
And that's
share
one of the reasons. I mean, I think China said they weren't going to buy, but I also thought the price of it would be so high, only those guys could afford to buy it. And there'll be antitrust issues if they buy it.
Yeah, they couldn't do that now. Maybe 10 years ago, but not now. Yeah.
Right. So there aren't buyers for it is the issue. Even if China wanted to sell, I don't think there are buyers for it.
Interesting.
Unless it's a completely bizarro choice. I mean, you look at like last time, the last round, like Oracle or Walmart. You know, I don't TikTok's grown so much since then that, you know, I'm sure it would have an enormous price tag. It's such a valuable asset, and it's, you know, blown way past a lot of the other kind of fledgling social media apps. But yeah, I mean, it would have to be a weird pick where they're not already so entrenched in the space. I know Microsoft was really vying for it last go around. But again, like you said, Barbara, you know, that's another company. You look at like the Activision Blizzard deal, like the antitrust regulation has just ramped up so significantly in the past couple of years.
Yeah, there's just no way it's going to. So you talked about another issue that is this big issue about cookies in advertising world. That's what everybody's talking about. And so there's been a stay of execution. Google's like trying to hold off when cookies are not. So what's the story with that?
And before you do that, Peter, just make sure let our listeners understand what cookies are. Because when I hear cookies, I think about Oreos and, you know, high fructose corn syrup.
A big blue monster.
Yeah. Exactly. So school us a little bit on this technology. I'm still trying to catch up with this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's something that's been around for pretty much as long as ads have been served on the web. It's just like a little thing that kind of tracks information on you when you browse online. When you think about kind of the original creepy ad factor of, you know, visiting a website about shoes and then getting served ads about shoes or what have you.
That's because, you know, that's of a kind cookie. Of like, gotcha.
Yeah, the cookie factor in effect. And, you know, because it is based on kind of this third party data that's then kind of synthesized and used for, you know, ad targeting campaigns. It's one of those things where there's been a little bit more privacy scrutiny towards it.
Got it.
You know, there's some bad actors in the space and what have you. And I think just sensitivity towards how that type of personal information is used is a lot higher. There's terms now like surveillance capitalism or what have you. and it's one of these things where 4 years ago, Google said, we're going to get rid of these things. And, you know, they're not the first to do it. Apple did it before them, and so did Mozilla, which owns Firefox. But Google has the largest browser share. Chrome makes up 60% of the market. So them saying, hey, these things are donezo, it means they're done for good. The problem being that so much of the internet ad economy has been built around them. And it's taken Google a very long time to introduce a viable alternative. And it's now been delayed this week three times.
Wow.
Their deadline to actually finally kind of finish these off. So it's become one of these things where it is one of the most transformative things that will happen to digital advertising. But it's been 4 years since Google announced it was going to happen. And it's kind of like, you know, waiting for a meteor to hit for 4 years or something. And it just doesn't happen. And it diminishes the amount of, you know, it's one of these things that'll disrupt everything, but also people are just kind of like, it's almost like a boy cried wolf situation. You keep saying, oh, cookie deprecation's happening. And it hasn't happened. And I think it's been difficult for a lot of advertisers to kind of wean off those old strategies in some ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm Barbara Kahn. I'm along with America's Read. This is Marketing Matters. And today we're joined by Peter Adams, who's a senior reporter at Marketing Dive. And he's talking about some of the biggest items in the news in the marketing world. We talked about TikTok. Now we're talking about Google and whether or not they're ever going to get rid of cookies. And one of the things, you know, while you were talking, there's two sides to it, I think, that are interesting. One side is, why does Google not want to get rid of them? Well, it's clear. You mentioned it's really driving a lot of their advertising revenue, and that's a big part of their bottom line. But Google, from what I understand, is also looking to make revenue from a different source, like moving more into AI and things like that. So to the degree they can a little bit move off of this advertising crutch, that might make them more willing to do it. And the other thing is, as you also said, and I want you to comment on both of this, Peter, is marketers have known for a long time cookies are going away. So they've been preparing for it, and maybe they're at the stage where they aren't as important to them as they once were. I don't know. I mean, when this finally happens, they're going to be ready for it, I assume. What do you think about that?
It's tough to say. I mean, I think a lot of you look at certain categories, and yes, they have prioritized first-party data strategies, you know, using data they own. They've invested more in these things called clean rooms, which is just another way to kind of synthesize data in a way that's a little more privacy-friendly. But I expect, just because of what a monumental change this is, that there have been some laggards, and they haven't necessarily been proven wrong in being laggards. I mean, again, this was originally supposed to happen in 2022. Google finally put a stake in the ground and said it's happening. It'll be done by the end of 2024. And now it's not happening until 2025. And you mentioned an interesting thing. I mean, I think Google does just want to be done with it. You know, they've said, we've built this alternative that's called the Privacy Sandbox. They've got this alternative method of doing this. The issue is now that regulators and industry watchdogs and trade groups are saying, hey, this doesn't really work. You know, this needs to be more extensively tested. And the biggest concern among a lot of them, one of many concerns among a lot of them, is that Google, again, has the biggest browser and the biggest ad tech infrastructure. And so they're the ones who are changing the rules and then also kind of setting the new agenda. So I know we've already talked about antitrust stuff, but, you know, it's one of these things where a lot of smaller players in the ecosystem are like, well, how can this be a fair system? Like, how can we know that Google isn't going to advantage itself with these new kind of formats it's introducing to replace cookies?
And just to sort of build on that, this is perhaps ironic, but I just Googled, how much money does Google make from advertising, Barbara? $305 billion per year, $498 million per day, and $346,000 per minute, $5,700 per second.
So they're not giving that up.
They're not giving that up, to your point.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is big stakes money.
It doesn't necessarily only rely on cookies, but that's a big part of their
model. That's a big part of the
model. They're going to keep kicking the stone down the road.
Yeah, it'll be delayed some more.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about
again, just to be clear, you know, it is in some ways regulated. You know, the Competition and Markets Authority in the UK is the one who's kind of stoppered this current phase of it. And they've also gotten pushback from companies, or not companies, but like a trade group called the IAB Tech Lab. You know, there's all sorts of people who are all, I think in Google's mind, the vision they've laid out for replacing it, they are happy with it and want to move forward with it. It's it's these other players in the ecosystem who are saying, let's take a step back and make sure we do this right, because this is going to be a really costly endeavor and we don't necessarily trust you to do this in a way that's going to benefit everybody.
Interesting.
So these are two issues that are pretty hard to call on a hit or a miss.
I know, right?
Because it's kind of a big mess.
Right. Is it a hit, a miss, or a mess? Barbara says it's a mess.
Yeah, so I don't know. Right. But let's get to something we can really talk about hit or miss, Peter, that you've written about recently.
Yes.
Which is what Coca-Cola is trying to do through Sprite. And through their other flavors, they introduced a new raspberry Coca-Cola flavor, too. I don't know if you wrote about that, but that's a new. They're trying to put more life in their fizzy drink market. And in Sprite, you wrote a story about the new Sprite Chill line that they're introducing. And before you talk about that, because I think it's pretty interesting, and I'm curious to know what you say. But, you know, Coke has had a history in the past of introducing flavors. Like a while ago, maybe 20 years ago, they introduced Vanilla Coke and Cherry Coke and all that.
Right.
And that was considered a failure. And the reason it was because once people started choosing those new flavors, they got out of repeat buy Coca-Cola.
I see.
And they started going to other brands.
Oh, interesting.
Now, and that's
to other brands.
Yeah,
outside.
Like if you're going to buy root beer, why don't you just go buy A&W, you know? Or if you're thinking about new flavors, why are you going to stay within Coke?
Yeah.
And so as soon as you start making that decision to choose a different flavor, it's kind of getting you out of automatic, let's just go buy Coke every time we buy soft drink. And they realized that was a mistake. Now, the situation is way different now in soft drinks because there's so much competition and there's all these energy drinks and things like that. So Coke to introduce new products to play in this space might make sense. It's defensive in some way rather than offensive. And maybe that's what's going on. But what do you think is going on with this Sprite Chill?
Interesting.
Peter, I know you wrote a whole story about this.
Yeah, so Sprite has really kind of ramped up its marketing kind of in line with what you're talking about with Coke. I mean, there was a period in time where Coke kind of pumped the gas on some stuff like this. But starting in 2022, you know, the core Coke brand introduced this. It's called the Creations Platform, where every couple of months they'll drop a limited time flavor that's very wild and kind of experimental. And, you know, Sprite doesn't necessarily do something like that, but they are, you know, kind of stepping up their game a little bit. And this chill flavor they're introducing is part of it. You know, it has a tactile kind of cooling sensation. You drink it and you actually feel something.
Oh, really? It's more than just a label. It's something different in the drink.
Interesting.
Yeah, they've used what they call like a flavor technology similar to what you would feel with like a confectionery good, almost like a peppermint patty, but without the mint.
Oh,
and kind of translated that.
That's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool.
Newfangled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is part of, you know, you mentioned energy drinks or what have you. You know, there's this big trend towards, you know, more unusual kind of flavor combinations, sensations. Part of that's probably driven by social media. You get people who post videos of, you know, I tried the crazy new Sprite flavor and here's what it's like.
Interesting.
But there is also kind of, as you mentioned, you know, the kind of cola wars are back on in full force. Part of that is disruptor brands. You have your Olipops and Poppies of the world.
Which are doing great.
They're killing it.
Yeah, the latter of which ran its first Super Bowl campaign this year. But then you also have, you know, Coke and Pepsi have been in this over century-long kind of marketing war, and Pepsi has kind of really ramped up some of these initiatives. I mean, it launched a Sprite competitor last year.
Starry.
I'm not a big fan. It's quite similar.
And Starry now owns the relationship with the NBA, which Sprite has a big history in basketball marketing, and part of this chill launch is them partnering with an NBA player. So yeah, it's definitely a little bit of there's a lot more marketing activity in this space, and it's interesting to see these kind of legacy brands step their game up a little bit, do more product innovation and that sort of thing.
I remember the famous Obey Your Thirst. Do you remember that?
No.
It's back now.
It's crazy. I thought, at least at the time, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, but the characterization was that image is nothing, your thirst is everything, obey your thirst. And it was sort of this really interesting sort of anti-image brand at the time. But you were saying that they are pulling in NBA. This is who's this kid? What's his name? Trey. What's this kid's name? The basketball.
Trey Young.
Trey Young. Trey Young. Is that his name? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So, they call him Ice Tray. So that's the tie-in, Barbara. And he's kind of he's a smaller guy, but he's a really sort of spark
he's the
plug.
One who's the spokesperson for
this. Yeah, he's the one for this new Sprite flavor that you were talking about. And I think it's a nice little tie-in because he plays for the Atlanta Hawks, I believe.
Which is mm-hmm. Cokes. Yeah,
right.
Which you're from. So.
Yes. So they're all trying to like make the connections and have it all make sense and stuff. But I think it's interesting to your point, Barbara. What do you think about, because you preach all the time about creating new experience. And actually having the flavors do technologically interesting
that
things.
That I didn't
That's
realize.
Cool.
I read this too quickly and I didn't realize there was something new. So, I mean, the problem with this, it's maybe just like a one time it's cool and then it doesn't hang on.
Yeah.
It's got to be something that lingers because this is a really fierce category now.
Absolutely.
And he's talking about the legacy brands and all the new brands and
new
Poppy's
brands.
Just going crazy.
They're killing it. They're killing it.
So, Peter, did you try it? You wrote the story.
I have not tried it yet. Yeah. No, it only hit shelves Monday, and I have not been able to get out and grab some.
That's why.
Is it, are you interested in trying it? Are you going to try it?
Candidly, not a huge soda drinker, but
good
maybe
man.
If I see one out in the market, I'll pick one up. The zero sugar.
Part of your research.
Zero sugar offering.
Yeah. Yes.
So, given that, what do you think? Is it hit or miss? Is it enough or too little too late?
Mm.
Well, I think it's kind of a hit in a way where I'm always excited to see, brands kind of, try out something that's a little bit more far flung and experimental. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the Coke Creations platform, and again, they're not the same thing, but, you know, it's the parent company and they have kind of a similar mindset when it comes to innovation. You know, it's been a very kind of staid period the past couple of years in marketing. It hasn't felt like these rivalries between the big companies have been as hot as they once were. Part of that's macroeconomic factors, mm-hmm. Inflation and budgetary pressures. But this year has seen a little bit of bounce back in ad spending. And so I like to see, these companies try and keep each other on each other's toes.
Nice.
And
yep.
And reinvent old chestnuts. You know, Obey Your Thirst was a thing when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's back and they've got new faces along with the old members of the campaign, some of them coming back. And think these kind of reinvention efforts for legacy CPGs are always something to watch.
So you're going to say it's a guarded hit.
It's a guarded hit.
A guarded hit.
Maybe it's okay.
Maybe it's okay, yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of Sprite. I mean, I think they've done such a great branding job.
You are such an Atlanta person.
I am.
You are very
Hotlanta,
loyal.
Hotlanta, ATL, Dirty South, baby. No, it's a fantastic spot. But, Sprite, it's in my mind, Barbara, there's Sprite and then there's these other lemonade-ish kind of drinks.
Oh.
They've done a really good job. Yeah, yeah.
Well, then it's all we have time for today. We replay our show every Wednesday. Oh, no, we're here every Wednesday and we replay it several times.
Yes.
We're here at Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. and we replay our shows throughout the week. You can find out more about us at Knowledge at Wharton or at SXM Business. Thank you all for listening today. We'll be back next week. Till then, this has been Marketing Matters. I'm Barbara Kahn here with America's Read, Business Radio, Sirius XM 132.